Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, a bored man has got access to a microphone and is going to use it to be wrong on the internet. Well, I've been talking a lot in the last few episodes about the Amiga Smalltalk project, and it finally lives, well, kinda. Thanks to Alan Francis, we've now built the thing on Amiga, actually on two different Amigas, both Amiga 1200s with substantial RAM upgrades, more on that later, one of which was an emulated machine and the other which is real hardware. And I'm pleased to say that the tests pass. I was using the HiSoft C compiler, well, C++ compiler, which becomes important. And Alan used VBCC, which was a compiler that I found while compiling the show notes for the last episode, and so didn't mention in my summary of the C compilers that were available. But it turns out that we didn't have problems with the ways in which these compilers interpreted the C language. In fact, we mostly had trouble with my understanding of C, basically for two reasons. One is that I have been using C for at least 20 years and have sort of followed the changes in the standard through C99 and beyond, and so I'm using modern constructs that weren't available in the C compilers of the late 80s and 90s, which were mostly following the what was then called the ANSI C standard and became the ISO, to give it its full name, ISO 9899-1989, the C89 standard. But also, because I haven't actually mostly been using C at all, I've mostly been using Objective-C, which has always been compiled with the GNU compiler throughout my entire career. There are other compilers, and of course StepStone had a translator before there was support in GCC. But it means that I've also got used to using GNU extensions to the C language because LLVM very early on had a goal of being compatible with GCC, and so both the Clang compiler and the GCC Objective-C compiler accept the same GNU extensions. So, there's a lesson here in portability that you need to be more aware than I was, certainly, of the differences in environment, both in availability of different features, but also in terms of what actually are the sort of core standard or at least conventional features of your language and programming environment. What are the things you're relying on that appear to be part of the language, but only because you're using a particular compiler or a particular operating system or a particular C library and so on. So, a quick example of some of the problems that we encountered. The line comments, the // comment, aren't in the C89 standard. They're a later addition to the language. So compilers on the Amiga, which were written in the early 90s, wouldn't accept those comments. The source wouldn't compile because the comment syntax was wrong. Also, in that early version of the language, you're only allowed to declare variables at the top of a block. So the statements immediately following a curly bracket, an open curly bracket, have to be the variable declarations. You can define the initial state of a variable in the declaration, but you can't declare a new variable after you've had other statements in your block. There were a few places where I was just sort of fairly slapdash going, I need a variable here that I haven't thought of yet, I'm going to define it and declare it on this line in the middle of a block. I tended not to do that because I'm translating code from Smalltalk and you can't define variables in the middle of a block in Smalltalk either. There's a special syntax surrounded by pipe characters that comes on the first line of a Smalltalk method. So I'd only use that in a couple of places. But one thing I had done was where there were preconditions expressed for a method, I had written those as assert statements in the first line of the code. And that meant that there was a statement before the variable declarations. And so that caused a lot of problems compiling on ANSI C compilers. Binary literal numbers are, so in C, it's always been the case that you can use octal and hexadecimal numbers, mostly because the computers that C was designed on, the sort of VAX architecture, was an octal architecture. So the memory words were multiples of 3 bits long, so you could always store multiple digits between 0 and 7 of an octal base 8 number. But being able to write a binary number by putting 0B and then a string of zeros and ones is something that was added in the GNU C compiler and then became a standard part of C++ at some point in the early 21st century, and then became a feature in C after that. So again, a modern feature that I can't use. There was a bit in the garbage collector where I have the list of root object pointers, which is basically the list of objects that we know exist. So you can always do a mark sweep garbage collection by looking at those objects and seeing what objects they reference, and then recursively seeing what objects those objects reference until you run out of new objects. Because anything you can't reach from one of those root objects, there's no way to find it in a program. So though I haven't got to the point yet where I have any root objects, I'm still writing the interpreter. So I haven't like written the dictionary class, so I haven't got the dictionary of globals, which is called the Smalltalk dictionary in the language. And I've only just finished the bit of the interpreter that's related to executing methods. So I don't yet have a method context as a Smalltalk object. So there are no root objects. So I declared this as an array with zero elements in, and compilers don't like that. What we're learning, by the way, is that I should make my development environment mimic my production environment as close as possible. This is fairly standard practice, and I hadn't sort of thought of the ramifications of it when I started this project. So what I will do is that the modern compilers have a standard flag, STD, where you get to say what language like variety you're supporting, and I'll set it to the C89 standard. I'll also turn on the pedantic flag, which means that any sort of extensions or ambiguous behavior that's outside the standard that the compilers would normally accept gets treated as an error. So I mentioned I was using the Hisoft C++ compiler. I actually had it on C++ mode, which made me address a thing that isn't a problem in C, but is a problem in C++, which is that you're not allowed to treat a void star pointer, so a pointer to anything in memory, as a specific type of pointer, as a pointer to some type in memory, without explicitly casting it. And at the right at the beginning of the program, I malloc some memory to use as the object storage, and then just set a pointer to that storage, which is of type object pointer star. So it's a pointer to a table of pointers. I needed to fix that cast, but only because I was trying to compile the program as C++ instead of C. The other issue that came up was my use of bitfields, and I don't even use bitfields in the program. There's a bunch of figures in the Smalltalk Blue Book which show how the bits in, say, an object header or in a method context are interpreted by the virtual machine. So, for example, an object has a small number of bits that are treated as its reference count, and three bits that are treated as its memory segment, or four actually, because the number of segments goes up to 16, and so on. And there are methods in the virtual machine that just do a bunch of bit shifting. So you can say, give me bits like 7 to 12 of this word, and then it shifts down so that you're looking at bits 0 to 12, and then it masks so that you set all of the top bits to 0, and then you've got bits 7 to 12, and you return that. Which means that you never, in the execution of the thing, actually use a bit field to say, I have this word and I want bit 7 to 12 of it. You never use that as part of a structure or a union with a pointer type. But for documentation purposes, I had written out those bit fields to explain the layout of these structures. And I had done so using the short integer type instead of the int integer type. And now that I look at my second edition Kernighan and Ritchie, the C programming language, I see that they have to be ints. They have to be signed or unsigned ints. They can't be other types. So that was just something I got wrong, but that the compilers I was using had all been very lenient about accepting it. And this is a good point to talk about the relevance of KNRC. It's very useful for the porting work that Alan and I have been doing over the last few days, because it's a very terse, essentially manual for the C programming language. What it is, the benefit of it as a book, is that it describes what the features of the C programming language are and what their syntax are and how you use them. It is not, I don't think, good as a tutorial for the C programming language. Like, firstly, it's totally not relevant as a tutorial in 2020 as a C for the C programming language, because it's nearly 30 years out of date at this point, or like pretty much exactly 30 years out of date. There is more modern C, and there are many more modern C practices that just weren't done back in the 1980s or in 1990 when this book was current. We are much, much more careful about use of memory in the in modern C programming, in making sure that buffers are correctly terminated and that pointers within buffers don't go off of the beginning or off of the end of the structure. And I'm constantly surprised when typing in methods from the Blue Book that there is no test that you're doing something that keeps a pointer within, like, within the acceptable range or within the memory region that it should be valid in. So, for example, I have the book open right now at page 586, which is the end of handling method context, and the way that you get what they call a temporary variable, which is effectively a local in a method, is that the interpreter has a method called temporary, and it takes a parameter called offset, and it returns from the object storage memory the pointer that is at the location offset plus temporary frame start of the method context that's currently active. So there's no check that offset is greater than zero, so I can easily read values from earlier on in the object, so I can read the rest of the object. In fact, if I give a big enough negative offset, I can read objects that came before it in the object storage. And if I give a big enough value, I can read objects that are after it in the storage. And there's no test for this thing. And because, you know, we're much more aware of information security and of undesired access to or modification of data in 2020 than we were in 1989 or 1983 when the Blue Book was written, this kind of gets my spidey senses tingling. I'm like, I want more preconditions and postconditions here. I want to know that this is a safe use of this method before I go around like giving these values out to whoever's running this code, because I don't necessarily know in the virtual machine that the Smalltalk bytecode that I'm running, that the method I'm executing, comes from compiling a Smalltalk method. It could be just a collection of bytecodes that has been crafted by someone in order to get the state out of the machine, or in order to change the state of the machine, but that isn't actually like the Smalltalk that someone is trying to run. And that, you know, that's definitely a change in programmer mindset that's happened over the decades. You know, I think it would be interesting. It's taken me a really long time to build this C implementation of the virtual machine, but it would be really interesting, I think, to build it in something like Eiffel and to think about these preconditions and postconditions of the object memory and the interpreter objects while I'm constructing them, and to build a sort of safe Smalltalk 80 runtime that only allows like valid operations, and then to see whether like the Smalltalk classes and objects that are in the rest of the book, like whether the Smalltalk image that you create with all of the rest of the implementation still runs when you've got these safety checks in place. That would be quite interesting. But that was a digression. I'm kind of talking about Kernighan and Ritchie, and it's, you know, people still recommend it as the book for people to read if they want to learn the C programming language. And putting aside the question of whether you think it's appropriate or not for people to be learning the C programming language in 2020, it's still widely used. You know, if you're using Windows, Linux, or Mac computer, or an iPhone, or an Android like a smartphone, or an iPad, or an Android tablet, or an Apple TV, or a Chromecast, or like pretty much any modern domestic consumer focused computer, you're using a whole load of C code. And if you're deploying to servers that run Linux or Windows or BSD, you're using a whole load of C code. C is still relevant, right? But KNR is not the place to learn C. KNR is a useful reference for 1989 vintage C. And I talked about this a bit in an article that I'll stick in the show notes, which is actually a review of Brad Cox's Objective-C programming language book, which is called Object-Oriented Programming: An Evolutionary Approach. Because he takes a very sort of philosophical view. He says, this is what object-oriented programming is. Here's the advantages. It would be nice to be able to like run our existing code, but take advantage of the benefits of object-oriented programming. So I'm going to introduce this language, which allows us to do both. And like the Objective-C part of the book is almost like a sort of side quest in the main adventure, which is like learning what the benefits of object-oriented programming are. And then you look at Bjarne Stroustrup's C++ book, which has two advantages over KNR. The first is that it still gets updated. So I've got the fourth edition, which is from C++ 11, but you know, he's now sort of moved all of this content online, and it's up to date with like C++17 and 20. And it's a discussion of why the different bits of C++ are the way they are and how you're supposed to use them, like what the sort of design principles are behind these features of the language, and then introducing the features in those contexts. So you get a lot more of an idea of how you're supposed to use these things and what they're for, not just here is a laundry list of the features in language and their syntax. So, you know, those are very different approaches to what seem to be the same topic, which is introducing a programming language in book form. So right at the top, I mentioned that Amiga Smalltalk runs on two Amiga 1200s, both of which have massive RAM upgrades. And this is something I mentioned back in episode one, that I just wrote the virtual machine as it's written in the Blue Book, which says I need 2 megabytes of memory for the object table. Well, not for the object table, for the object storage. The object table is at the beginning of the object storage, and what it gives us is indirection between the values that Smalltalk code uses when it has references to objects and the memory that is backing those objects. And that means that like the garbage collector can do things like move objects around to compact memory space. And it can see where objects are being used in the in other Smalltalk objects, because it knows that a reference to the object table has to be appointed to an object. This is always a problem with implementing garbage collection in C or in Objective-C, is that on a 32-bit platform, a 32-bit integer could be a 32-bit integer, or it could be a pointer to somewhere in memory. And it's very hard to know whether a memory region is being used or not, because you don't have a thing that says, I have a handle on this region. You have a sea of numbers that could be interpreted in any form. Anyway, I used 2 megabytes, which is basically the maximum that the Smalltalk 80 VM expects to exist, and haven't yet done the thing where I ask how much memory is on this computer, how much object storage should I give it. I'm kind of tempted to just like carry on blindly ignoring that question until I've got the whole VM written, so that then I can carry on like just writing all of this part without using an Amiga. I can, you know, carry on writing it in Portable C, and that would be certainly the easiest thing to do. Addressing that question would make it easier for other people with other Amigas to run this code, which has its benefits, and perhaps also would help me to test the garbage collector, because in a test I could shrink the amount of memory down to one segment, which would be I think 128k of memory, and then I could use that smaller amount of memory. It'd be easier to set up like controlled scenarios for garbage collection. I don't have to like fully understand 2 megabytes of memory and the values that are stored in it in order to know what the outcome of my test should be. Still, that's all a task for the future. So thank you very much for listening. I really appreciate that people are still like listening to this podcast and subscribing. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Please let me know any feedback you have, anything you'd like to hear about in future episodes. You can find me on Twitter at iwasleeg, iwasleeg, or send me an email to graham@iamleeg.com, graham@iamleeg.com. Thank you very much for listening. Take care, and I'll see you again soon.